Yeah.
I'm talking to Deb Steele. We're at the on Ohio State Fairgrounds at Stand Up for Ohio Festival. I'm listening.
So I'm helping with the Progressive Student Coalition, which is getting started at OSU. And oddly enough, they're saying some of the same things you were saying, is that we just sort of need more progressive groups coming together. So the Progressive Student Coalition is the feminists, the environmentalists, the worker rights student groups coming together to try to get more bang for our activism energy. And so they did an event called Live Against Five, May 5th at OSU. Had about 300 signatures throughout the night. And they're right now working on something called the Disorientation Guide to give to the freshmen about the realities of the politics in our city that we live in and the realities of Gordon Gee acting pretty cushy with corporations and, you know, murmurs of him wanting to privatize Ohio State University in the near future.
Like that enterprise university idea?
I'm pretty sure it would be called the Ohio State University once it gets together, but there's funding right now in our state budget to divert money that should be going into universities into charter universities. So I wouldn't be surprised if we did nothing in a year and a half, you would see some kind of OSU wing that's a charter school. And I've heard the chief medical center lobbyists say, we're revisiting our mission statement. Maybe we won't always be a land-grant university. You know, so we have a whole lot of fires to put out here and now. But the greed doesn't end on the other side. Privatize everything.
What are the other things you're working on, Deb?
Okay, so the other things I'm working on is trying to get something called a community benefit agreement from Ohio State University. They're expanding their medical center. It's called Project One. It's the largest construction project Columbus has ever seen, and it's going to impact the Near East a lot. OSU probably is going to buy half of Poindexter Village. It's a 22-acre site. One of the first public housing units ever opened in the country. So this is prime real estate in an important neighborhood that has a long history. And if we can get a community benefit agreement, the community can grow with OSU. And if we don't get a community benefit agreement, OSU, the developer, continues to expand as they see fit. They've gotten a lot of tax breaks at the federal, city, state level. Tax breaks, grants, what have you. At least $300 million worth. And what we want are things like a local hiring provision, a career ladder, more assurances that people are going to be receiving family-sustaining wages and benefits. And so that is long-term what we're working on. And then here over the summer, we've got Sodexo, trying to kick Sodexo out of the Columbus Public Schools. And Sodexo is also a food service vendor at the Horseshoe Arena and at Schottenstein's. So they have a contract with OSU. They have a bigger contract with Columbus Public Schools. And this summer, the Columbus Public School Board, at some point, they can, I think, drag it out to the fall, couldn't renew their contract with Sodexo, and we don't want them to do that. It's a horrible company. It's a known human rights violator across the world. And so there are other responsible contractors, even more locally based, maybe not Ohio-based, but based in our country, that treat their workers better. And then we also got House Bill 194, making sure people sign that petition and make sure people have easy access to voting. So that's the slew of things we're working on. But Jobs with Justice meets the third Tuesday of every month at our Union Hall, which is at 27 Euclid Avenue at 6 p.m.
194, what's going on there? I know you mentioned voting, but what are some of the specifics of that?
There's a petition out now to try to repeal House Bill 194. It restricts the early voting window. They didn't keep the photo ID thing in there. That's not on the table right now, thank goodness. But it restricts, if House Bill 194 stays in place, it makes voting harder. And, you know, 2004 should have shown us early voting's a great thing. And even in 2008, we had lines out the door at Vet Center. And they want to restrict voting? You know, the only people who want to restrict voting seem to have a problem with democracy.
What's the rationale?
They don't want people voting.
They're trying to say it saves money or who knows what.
I believe they're trying to say it saves money. But, you know, it was a poll tax. I had to wait 3.5 hours to vote in 2004. On top of that, I don't think my vote was counted. And there's a reason they made it difficult back then. And they would love to make it difficult again. So I believe that if you want to vote absentee, an application should be sent to everybody in the state. you know, they're not doing that. They did it in the three C's last year. I don't know if they're even going to be mailing out the absentee applications. So spending a lot of time to vote is a poll tax. Making sure there's enough voting machines there, you know, didn't happen in 2004. Different Secretary of State. It was Kenneth Blackwell back then. We had Jennifer Bruner did a great job. Now we have John Husted, who did not agree with the photo ID requirement, but that didn't stop these bold Republicans from trying to go ahead with it. At this moment, they took it off the table, but restricting early voting is what is on the table. It is more than on the table. It is House Bill 194, and we should have early voting because there's a need. People want to vote, and they shouldn't have to wait in a long line. And, it's up to the citizens if they're okay with one side who doesn't want people to vote. I mean, it's pretty obvious, and this is an across-the-country thing, trying to make sure student IDs don't count as identification, trying to make you use your whole Social Security number when you vote.
Why is that a bad idea?
It's identity theft. The last four digits of my Social Security and my autograph doesn't work. You know? It scares people out of voting. Some people don't even... I mean, you should make voting easy and accessible, and if there are people trying to cheat the system, there is an existing paper trail now to find those people. And it is very, very seldom. But they want to push this notion, this rumor, that Obama got in office because lots of people could vote. You know, people that shouldn't be voting, or there was bad voting going on.
Homeless people voting.
I think it was park bench voters, you know, was the official comment I read. And I think homeless people absolutely should vote. And I think affluent people should vote. And I think college students should vote. You know, even if I don't agree with how you're voting, our country runs better when people vote.
How do you, since that's a broad process you're mentioning, how do you build alliances so as to prevent a right-wing extremist takeover of our political process? Not to be sensationalist, but it seems like that is a likelihood, given the extent of corporate power in our country right now. To respond to that, it would seem that alliances are required. We don't have the money necessarily as the corporations do, but we have the numbers. Yet many of us are fragmented, and people are fighting on issues of race and gender and nationality and ethnicity and religion without recognizing perhaps common cause we have in terms of what's going on, in terms of what's happening to the public sector, what's happening to our economy. Any ideas on ways to promote alliances?
There is a lot more we have in common, and, you know, there's certain times you have to get buckled down and do the SB5 fight, and an individual may need to just focus on that for now. But at the same time, part of that fight was getting signatures first, and then the finish line is making sure people vote. So I think it would be natural, if somebody isn't running the whole SB5 show, to also care about House Bill 194. The attacks are happening. There's something for everybody to hate at the State House right now. You know, the attack on women's rights, for abortion if they need it.
And that, I've heard, is more a working class women's issue than it is, say, a women's issue in other classes.
It perhaps is. I'm a feminist, but I don't have the time to be totally buckled down on the details of the heartbeat bill, but I know it's one of the most aggressive attacks on a woman's right to choose in the country.
Well, the point being that someone from International Socialist Organization pointed out that point is not mentioned, that this is not just a woman's issue, that this is also a class issue, that this is a way to form allies in terms of the pro-choice movement.
Yeah, and that's what I mean by these issues overlap. So, I mean, the divide and conquer is well underway. And in wealth you manage, and in poverty you survive. And I think we need to manage our resources, not do this big fire sale they're doing, selling our prisons, allowing drilling in the parks. They're allowing drilling in university-owned lands. I mean, this is absolutely insane. If we don't repeal House Bill 5, Senate Bill 5, which will be voting no on Issue 2, there are people at the State House who are okay with a 50-to-1 teaching ratio. I mean, this is awful. These are the kinds of things. It'll be privatization of everything. They are repealing child labor laws across the country. In Missouri, they're repealing child labor laws. In Michigan, they're lowering minimum wage for children just to compete with adult workers. You know, you should not have a 19-year-old competing with a 15-year-old to bag your groceries at the store. The wages should be the same. And if they can drive down the middle class, even the working class or poor, so they can continue to get rich, you know, they will. And I believe that people across the country are connecting the dots. This is a well-orchestrated attack on the working class. It's a well-orchestrated attack on people voting, on driving the environment for profit rather than the environment for people, the long run, you know. We can have jobs and a strong, a healthier environment. And they want to pretend it's one or the other on all kinds of issues. So as far as building our coalitions and trying to fight more than one of these fires at once, I think it's fairly natural and easy. I mean, today's event is a showing of that. We have policy people. We have issue-based people. We definitely have unions here. It's been a natural fit for me as an individual. So, you know, at the end of the day, if somebody has to focus on just their campaign for now, that's fine. And after their victory or whatnot, you know, these problems are not going away anytime soon. And I think more people are connecting the dots. And, you know, if people aren't inspired that they're trying to slow down your right to vote, I don't know what would inspire them. You know, there it's a reality of a 55-to-1 teaching right now in Detroit.
Well, the fear is, not to dwell on the negatives and be gloom and doom, but the fear is that so many people in the working class and middle classes, if situations get worse, will not have that shared consciousness, but instead look at issues such as undocumented immigration, or want to scapegoat gays and lesbians, or anyone perceived as liberals, et cetera, instead of looking for, instead of finding that common ground. So that's what, you know, I don't dwell on that as a defeatist, but it's a matter of wanting to fight as well as we can to build the alliances, to prevent that type of extremist takeover of our country, or if you can't prevent it, minimize the damage of it if it does happen.
I mean, for me, something that really helps me understand what's going on, and I can't quite cite my source, I think it was somebody who was on Stephen Colbert, 18% of people think they're the top 1%. So when we say raise taxes on the rich, almost 1 in 5 people are walking around saying, hey, they want to raise taxes on me. And it's like, that's sweet, you make $80,000 a year or $300,000 a year. You're not actually who we're talking about. It is hard for people to comprehend how rich the rich have gotten in the past 80 years. I mean, in a nutshell, what's going on? We hit peak wages in this country in 73 or 72. At the sunset of the civil rights era, we got laws in place. Nixon was the best president for the environment ever, and not because he personally was an environmentalist, but you could see, taste, and feel the pollution. And people were mobilized around it and actually came out of the Republican Party. It's in line with conservative values to have local control over your power sources. Now, that's not today's Republican Party. Today's Republican Party says smaller government, and then they make bigger government once they're in there. You know, Reagan was great at talking. I was a kid and loved him when I was a kid, and I'm a diehard liberal now. My parents were very nice and gave me my naive time to watch the president smile on TV. But that man, you know, increased the deficit. And so in 72, 73, when we were starting to head towards prosperity for everyone, again, like we did at the end of World War II, this made the bosses upset and the rich upset. And they got together and they did their think tank and they decided they're going to go after progressively active churches, unions, and make government the problem. So then by 81, you have Reagan, who's becoming our president, saying government's the problem. And that has never made sense to me. Now, I wasn't paying that much attention when I was a child, but they are rolling out with the same talking points. They may not say trickle down, but that's what people hope for. So if 18% of people are walking around thinking they're the top 1%, and this Republican Party is selling trickle-down theory, and you don't pay enough attention to realize you're not in the top 1%, and not paying enough attention to what's actually trickling down, they're going to keep selling it because it's gelled for the past 35 years. It sounds nice, and people want quick fixes. And there are some real solutions, but the solutions go towards self-sufficiency. And I believe that these corporate-funded Republicans are not interested in self-sufficiency. They like that word, but it's not...
Self-sufficiency of what type?
local power over your energy sources. If you had solar, wind, and geothermal, let's say one was owned by your whole block and one was something you had on your house, and of course you might still use a coal-fired power plant as your base, then you would start to be a little bit more self-sufficient than being just dependent on an AEP who runs those coal-fired power plants in Meigs County. And I have a friend that lives down there. When it gets cold, her voice goes sore because they pump out more pollutants. You know, I'm not telling people to stop living their life. I own a Nintendo Wii. I drive a car. But I conserve where I can, and I'm actually going to become more self-sufficient if I can buy local food versus corporate farms and faraway food. So there's a whole slew of things. In meeting our climate change problems, we have to do a lot of what our grandparents did. But I'm not asking us to go back to the days of our grandparents. Let's just, you know, make sure the well water's safe to drink. And let's put a windmill up on the house. And at the same time, so we can transition out of these dirty pollutions, these dirty fossil fuel-based power sources. And the exact people who say we don't need to do that suddenly love nuclear power. Because nuclear power is concentrated power, concentrated wealth, and keeps us dependent on one power company versus me being more self-sufficient and having a variety of power sources at my home. And that home also being weatherized and more self-sufficient. You know, so what I'm talking about are gradual steps. And if people can't see that it's a win-win, like this loss of the 3C rail, absolutely tragic. I believe that they wanted to build the locomotives in Ohio, or that was a possibility. I mean, that is getting closer to self-sufficiency. When you don't, it's close to 18 or 20% of your wages needs to go towards transportation. That's a whole lot to put on a working class family. Whereas if I could bike to the train station, go to one of the other 3Cs, have a good time, and come back down, you know, that's not working. But that public transportation is closer to the middle income being able to pick themselves up by their own bootstraps. We had it in the 1950s. And they ripped that up because they wanted us dependent on gas. And then we had our oil crisis in the 70s. And every president since has said they want us to become more energy independent, but has not done enough to make it happen. And those solutions are not more drilling and nuclear power plants. They're solar, wind, geothermal, biodiesel probably off algae, not corn, and going in that right direction in gradual phases, just like we did with healthcare, that we have to gradually phase into that, because these systems, we are very dependent on coal-fired power plants. Ohio's 86% powered by coal-fired power plants. It's a really dangerous thing to keep doing, that the system can't even handle it all being shut off at once. So rather than build one more coal-fired power plant, we should be building solar panels, wind turbines, which we do build in Ohio. Ohio's the fourth highest number of green jobs in the country. And keep going in that direction rather than continue on this other direction that keeps a few people really rich. Same with our broken healthcare system. They did not want a change away from that. It kept a few people really rich. And then they come around when the solution is so watered down that pharmaceutical companies are still going to make enough money, then they'll come along to the watered down solution. But same with the environmental fight. The same people who said we can't go to renewables suddenly love nuclear power. And nukes are not a green job. It's, you know, we won't get onto that show, but the idea is self-sufficiency and phasing into that. And people can pick themselves up by their own bootstraps, but not if they don't have rights in the workplace. And not if we have to stay dependent on these fossil fuels. And Ohio has the dirtiest air and the most contaminated water in the nation. And now they're opening up fracking. So there are mountains to climb in front of us, but we have no choice but to climb them. And I know we are not wrong on these issues. So whether or not we win in the short term, we're not going away, because the middle class is continuing to get kicked in the gut. And, you know, we have to stand up to these problems.
The arc of the universe bending toward justice. There's some type of Martin Luther King Jr. quote about that.
Yeah.
He said it's long, but it does bend toward justice, sometimes imperceptibly.
I believe that people want to do the right thing, but they are divided from each other more and more. So when we get in a more community-based system rather than sell you out, you know, I think that we have a lot of things that can naturally heal a lot of our problems that we have. But if they want to continue to divide and conquer, and you want to take the short-term benefit of let's sell the prisons and let's frack the parks, we're going to keep all collectively paying the consequences.
Thanks.
Sure, thanks.
There's a little bit more of a rant.